Welcome to the Mustang Owners Podcast. And now your host, Steve Hall.
Welcome to another Mustang Owners Podcast. Today we have a couple of folks that are going to be joining us. Rick Ibarra and also Finley Ledbetter. They're both with the Boss 351 Club. They're joining us to tell us a little more what their group does so that we can learn more and maybe hopefully find some people who are interested to join their club or go to some of the events that they have, because we feel it's important that all clubs that are out in the hobby are, you know, people are being made aware of them, and so that, you know, we can get a better reach for them also. So I'm stumbling through that a little bit, so I apologize, guys, but I want to welcome to the podcast, so welcome.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Tell us and the listeners a little bit about when you guys started, how it got started, what you guys are doing, what kind of events, how many members or how many cars. I mean, it's great that we have such active, you know, group as such, because, you know, bosses are just, you know, let's face it, boss cars are always the sexy ones. And so I'm hoping you can kind of just share how you guys got started.
It's all kind of started as a joke, really. In 2016, I co-organized with Finley, just doing a Boss 351 Corral at the Muscle Car Corvette Nationals. So we had 9 Boss 351s in variety colors. While we were in the midst of the show, I jokingly said to Finley and Greg Boss, we ought to do a Boss Nationals at Greg's Ford dealership. I mean, he bought a Boss 351 brand new and came home from Vietnam. And in 1971, from his dad's dealership, and his last name is Boss. So we planned it for 2018, did all the recruiting for sponsorship and created a website. And we had a pretty good turnout of about 157 Boss 351s, Boss 429s, Boss 302s, Boss powered Cougars. And we also invited the 427 camera guys. At this event, we had, in 2018, we had 26 Boss 351s and 25 Boss 429s in a row, which was quite the record. So that's how we got started. We planned for 2020, but COVID killed the show because of the pandemic. So we had it in 2021 in Marysville, Kansas again. COVID had a little bit of effect besides the heat. We had about 120-some cars, you know, again, Boss 351s, Boss 302s, Boss 429s. And also the new generation bosses. We invite the 2012 and the 2013 guys also to the Nationals. So that's just basically how we got started. It's all kind of a joke. And then it kind of blossomed. We're not really a club. We do have a Facebook page we're creating for the next show, which will be in August of 2023 in East Moline, Illinois, the 24th, 25th, and 26th. At what they call the Bend Expo. And then again, it's going to be centered around the Boss-powered Mustangs. Finley, you want to add anything?
We were kind of kidding, but I think we were serious at the same time. We have a very eclectic group of Boss 351 owners in this country. As you can imagine, most of the people that own these cars, that a lot of them had them a long time, and they are very eclectic, and they're very passionate about their, I don't even call it a hobby. It's not really a hobby. They're more enthusiasts, you know. A lot of people have invested a lot of time and money in these cars, you know, and I've tracked them and been a 71 Mustang enthusiast my whole life for 40-something years. You know, we put the show together. A lot of people showed up. If you go to bossnationals.com and click on the video and watch the video of our first show, you can see it was a tremendous operation, and we're hoping that the show and East Moline rivals that now that COVID has slowed down. And we actually had guys from Australia, guys from Canada, guys from all over come to the show. And the last show during COVID, you know, we had a skeleton crew show up, but we had a great time. And, you know, we're pushing forward to build this back to what it would have been without COVID. COVID really hurt us in numbers in the last show. Plus, we had a little heat dome event in Kansas. If you remember, it was 102, 103, 104 degrees. But we're going to have another one, and we're going to continue this going. And I have a big collection of Boss Mustangs. You know, Rick has a Boss Mustang. And these people, the people that are involved in this model car, and really any car, they're all enthusiasts, and they're just a little wacko about it. And we have all those guys show up, and we have a great time. I'm telling you, the judging is a little intense at times, and Rick can weigh in on that. But it is a great time, and we love the hobby. We love the cars. We love what we do, and we wish that more people would get involved. And you know, I have a museum in Texas, the Blue Oval Car Barn, and that's what I do here, is try to keep people involved, try to save the cars, and then try to take these Boss 351s, save them from the scrap heap, get them remanufactured, and get them back out there to the next owners. And that's what I'm all about.
And that's exactly where it goes when you talk about the passion of the hobby, is that there are people who do step up and say, here, we want to do this and this and this, and they try to, of course, extend the interest level of that particular car or that particular generation of cars. I'm going to go back to the Chicago show that you mentioned. Was 2016 the only time you exhibited there, or have you done any before? I mean, after that?
I've always been to the Muscle Car Corvette Nationals since the show started, and the only year I missed it was the year that they shut it down for COVID, 2020. Finley and I put this together basically for 2016 and then 2018 and 21. I guess I could say we were novices learning our own car show event.
Well, the reason why I was asking, one year I did go, Bob Perkins had asked me to go up to it, and we had not opened the museum yet. We were still in a formative building stage, and well, anytime you have construction, God knows what kind of problems we had. But anyway, I remember sitting down with I think it was you, Rick, that you had a poster. You had a poster, yep. And I think you also had a registrar book.
That was the first edition of the book.
Okay.
And I just came out with a second edition of the book with of known VINs of cars. I'm up to 690 some VINs. Actually, about 10 more just popped up since the book came out in February. Some cars are documented, destroyed, or it's just the drivetrain, transmission, or the engine. But yeah, the second generation book is out. If anyone wants to get in touch with me about buying a second book, they can get a hold of me at boss351book@gmail.com. I only printed 800 copies. They're all signed and numbered. And then I also run the database registry. I've been tracking Boss 351 since I was 15 years old. I'm 57 now, so you can tell the years I've been tracking these cars, their movement across the globe. I got a pretty extensive database. And there's a lot of history with these cars that I try to keep up on. Sometimes it's hit or miss. You know, something will get sold and, you know, no one tells me, and then it'll pop back up 10 or 15 years later. Me and Finley are pretty passionate about the Boss 351. It's been in my whole life. My dad used to work for Dahl Ford from 65 to 72, setting up all the high-performance Mustangs, Shelbys, and Torinos. That's how I got my foot wet in Ford.
The reason I brought that up, though, was that actually I was at that particular show in Chicago. I guess it must have been 2016. I think we had announced earlier that year that we were going to be doing a museum. And I remember seeing your display of all the 351s in a circle.
Yeah.
I remember correct, with all colors. And I thought that was really well done. And so I introduced myself and chatted with you for a few minutes, and you gave me a poster. And we still have that poster. So I want to let you know that I do remember that. Kind of an interesting story. We had... last year, we had a first-generation display here in the museum, and we kept looking for something of a 71, 72, or 73 Mustang. And we had a gentleman call us up, and he said, my neighbor's got a Boss 351. And the car was, I mean, we've been looking all over the place for one. He could not come up with one. The actual gentleman who he was calling me about lives 5 minutes from the museum. And I mean literally 5 minutes. And so I go over and meet the guy, talk to him. Well, come to find out, the company that he works for has done restoration work for us. So he knew of us, but he never mentioned that he had a 351. So he did loan it to us. Well, while that car is on display, a neighbor of his that lives in the very same housing development says, if you ever need another one, I have a 1971 351. And so here we are. We've looked all over the country trying to find the Boss 351. And in 5 minutes from our museum, or house two of them. So it's amazing how you just never know. And these two gentlemen don't even know each other. And they live 10 minutes, they live 5 minutes away from each other because it's the rather large development. They're both on opposite sides. So it's, I always think it's interesting when it comes to cars, but you just never know what you're going to find around the corner because sometimes these cars just never get out of the house. They never get out of the garage, I should say. So it's interesting. So having to put together a registrar of all that is it's got to be a tough process to try to find these cars. I'm assuming a lot of it's just word of mouth that comes about from your other network from your other people who are already in your book.
Some of that is word of mouth. I was fortunate to work for the U.S. military and Department of Defense. So doing traveling for them in the summertime, you know, I try to find a Ford show over the 31 years I've working for the government. And so, you know, always finding Boss 51s, you know, used to look in Auto Trader. When Super Ford magazine was out, I'd always call about one for sale. They used to put ads in the back of magazines. So that's how I done that. And then some people actually documented themselves and then sent me their information. Some of it I had, some of it I didn't. But yeah, it is a monumental task trying to keep up on these. I got a pretty unique spreadsheet on Excel.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that about being in magazines, and nowadays you can't even find magazines that focus on Mustangs. They're kind of, you know, they're kind of fading away, other than, you know, MCA's Mustang Times. Do you guys ever get involved with, I don't know if you use the word members or some of your enthusiasts or hobbyists, but do you do anything with the MCA with bringing those kind of those cars to the MCA events?
Yeah, we're constantly trying to improve the quality of every car, and MCA as well as McCacken play a big part in that in their judging events. You know, we're lucky that some Boss 351 owners and enthusiasts are MCA judges. So we have the ability to, you know, dive deep into the authenticity of these cars. Scott Skalinski is one of our associates that's a well-known Boss 351 enthusiast, and, you know, he's an MCA judge. So consequently, we try to get the owners to have the cars judged. That forces them really to up their game, you know, and to continue to improve and to improve the cars. You know, we take a couple of cars to be judged every year from our collection. And then we work on them all year long to, you know, to cure them and improve them. And really, like I said earlier, our charge is to continue to improve the cars for the next owner. And that's really all we can expect to do in our lives. And MCA is a big part of that. They have kind of treated the long-nosed or 71 car kind of as an outlier for many years. But over the last 10 or 15 years, the car has gained in notoriety and value. And, you know, there isn't a day goes by I don't get a call about a car now, a 71 car now, high performance car, you know, a 429 or a Boss car. Every day I hear about one. And we acquire and restore a lot of them. And then a lot of them we pass along to other people that are trying to acquire and restore them. And it's a passion. You know, I had a 71 Mustang in 1972. And I've never ceased to be involved and continue to improve and move them forward since then.
I think that's the key point, though, is the passion, because this is not a one-off opportunity, one-off situation, so to speak. And what I mean by that is that you have to do it on a daily basis, because otherwise, if not, then pretty soon all the work that has been put into it, it takes forever it takes a long time, I guess I should say, for you guys to do the amount of work you've done. But if you don't keep it up, it can dissolve in a matter of months. It goes, you know, just it can become something almost forgotten. And obviously, your guys' passion and the events and such have shown that you guys are going to keep it up. And that way, the people who are part of the Boss program or the 351 program with you guys appreciate that. And they're looking to probably, as you said, through word of mouth, bring more people to your group and to your events. But let me ask a little bit on the event side. Obviously, it sounds like you do a judged event also with when you've done them in the past and probably will do so in the future.
Yeah, yes, we do. We do judging, and then we also do what we call our abbreviated MCA Boss National Gold Certificate. Those cars are hand selected by us judges, and then once that car is, you know, if it wins gold or wins first, second, or third, You know, we note that in our registry. And I'm kind of wanting to link up with Bob Askin from the Muscle Car Corvette Nationals and then MCA and say, once this certain Boss 351 gets all three gold, I mean, that is a pinnacle award system right there.
I know that I've had that. I've heard of other groups trying to have that same conversation, and I agree. I think it'd be awesome to show that a car has done, you know, the trifecta as such. So I hope that's something that would come about, because I think that's an incredible achievement and needs to be recognized. But again, you know, you have MCA and MCA ways of doing things, which is, you know, I can't speak for that. I just know that, of course, they do have their guidelines and such. In the hobby itself, you have those that we restore back to a certain level, and then you have those that modify. I'm just curious, because I just don't know, but do you find that there's an interest in modified 1971s or Bosses, or is it most people just trying to restore back to originality, or what seems to be more prevalent?
Let me take this one, Rick. I can tell you right now that I have bought resto-modded cars, several of them, and took them back to original. So I'm a little bit of a passionate original guy. You know, I spent all my time searching for part numbers and date codes on components and putting the cars back, you know, as original as possible. There is a place in this for resto-mod cars that the original engine's no longer available. The car was damaged. The car is not a car that has that kind of value. There's only certain 71s, for instance, we're basically talking about the Boss 351s. There's only certain 71 high performance models. The, you know, the Super Cobra Jet cars and the Bosses are really the only ones that have enough value that you would want to spend the money on to do a concourse restoration. So if you've got an F code or H code car, even an M code car, the lower performance cars, really, the resto-mod track's the way to go. Put modern brakes on it, put a modern stereo in it, you know, fuel injection, five-speed, do the sorts of things to it you want to do, because you're not going to damage the value of the car. But if you have a Boss 351 or a 429 Super Cobra Jet car or a big block Cobra Jet convertible, you know, the value on those cars is so high that there's enough room there for you to spend $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 on the car and do a concourse-style restoration back to original, as long as you have enough of the original parts to make it worthwhile. The big thing that people, that the way this industry is going today is less restoration, though, and more survivor-class cars. You know, we're out searching for survivor-class cars. We bought a car last week in Illinois that had 18,000 original miles on it. You know, I've got 9,000 and 6,000 and 20,000 mile original cars that are, you know, survivor class cars. And that's really the way the market is going, more towards searching for those survivor cars and then keeping them in survivor condition instead of painting them and restoring them or doing any of the resto-mod stuff. You know, I would enjoy to have a nice resto-mod to drive on a hot day with a modern air conditioner and a great stereo system and a five-speed instead of buzzing a, you know, 411 four-speed car. So I would actually enjoy driving one, but from a collector standpoint, they're not very valuable compared to the properly restored numbers matching cars. Or the survivor quality cars are actually the most valuable cars. You know, the cars that have very few miles that have never been modified and are still all original. And that's really the way that the hobby is going.
And I think you can say the same, though, which is good, but there's the other first generation cars are kind of in that same boat. If you can find anything that's first generation, especially first generation, low mileage, original, that's, you know, that's really where the collector has gotten into that market. The collector in that market is not going to take that car, like you said, and turn it into a resto mod. But if you got a car that's got a blown engine or needs a total, it's more of a heap than anything, then of course you have the freedom to kind of do what you want to it. And that's the perfect car to go into a resto-mod effect to it. So we're all about trying to make sure the cars are, don't crush them, repair them, restore them. Sometimes you have to do it as a resto-mod, but obviously as a survivor car, that's more of a museum quality car, obviously. That when you can share something though that kind of low mileage to the car as such. A couple of things I wanted to find out then, going back to your car show or your event, I'm just gonna call it a show, your event. there is judging going on. Are there other activities going on during that 2 or 3 day stretch that you guys are having at your event?
No, we stick with just strictly people mingling. But we do a swap meet. I mean, that is huge. It's very huge at our events, the swap meet. We don't do a burnout contest. Marysville doesn't have a track of any sort, drag strip or anything like that. So car show, just mingle with people, have, you know, band playing every night at the but our swap meet is huge. I would say it is very huge. Equal to the footprint of the cars at the show. For 2023, we have not discussed yet. We do have a drag strip here. We also have the potential of maybe do a burnout contest, but really, no one with Boss Restored Cars do that kind of stuff.
Right, right. I was just kind of curious if you guys might do like a little cruise here and there, or kind of take in some of the area that you're going to be at the event wise, just to kind of do some, I would really kind of scratch my head if somebody was interested in doing a burnout, or to be honest with you, even think about going to a drag strip, because, you know, you don't want to push the luck a little bit, I guess. It's just make sure that, you know, you want to take care of the car. Cause we do find that, not a lot of folks are interested in doing something with a first generation car to push it to a limit like that. So I'm not surprised, but I was just kind of curious if there's like little cruises, or if you guys have, you know, people come in to be guest speakers about, you know, like a Bob Perkins talking about the car and things of this nature. Just kind of curious other kinds of activities that kind of would be of interest to those who are at the event or who are the attendees.
For our first show, we did have some speakers. We had some good information that came out of Brighton, Michigan, the Car Craft, which Mark Haas was one of our speakers. And then, of course, Bob Perkins was our speaker also. We plan on probably doing that again at our 2023 event. We just started putting together the website the other night, and me and Finley are talking about what we'll do. I just met with the person this morning to go and talk about renting the footprint of the place. We will have a building that we can put 80 cars in for people who want indoor space and or swap meet space. But there will also be an area that we can do some guest speaking. It's a very nice setup. It's actually built by Mecum. This is where they're going to do their Gone Farming tractor auction. So the building is huge for restored farm equipment.
The reason I was asking some of those particular points was we'd love to, as more and more details come about, if you would, is to keep us on your email list, or if we can sign up for something so that we can promote it also. Between our social media and our email blasts, we reach out to about 50,000 Mustang enthusiasts. But we also go to a number of Mustang shows around the country promoting the museum. But at the same time, if we have information about events or such, so if we go by and we see a Boss 351 and we have some information, we love, you know, we like to hand it out to folks and let them know, hey, just so you're aware of it, something to be aware of, and you get more information by going to this website or to signing up on Facebook or what have you. So I guess my point is just like, you know, if we can be of help to help promote that and let people know about things that are going on, when you're ready, we'd love to do so. We do try to be a conduit at all things Mustang, because we can reach out also probably a lot of the same people that you already have contact with, but we have probably a lot more who may not have a Boss 351, but they appreciate him and they want to come and see the event. Not everybody that shows up for your Boss event owns a Boss, but they appreciate Boss cars and want to come and see that. So please keep us in mind to do so, because we'd love to be able to kind of share that information to folks that do come to or that we see at our shows. So if you would, please keep us in mind.
Oh, most definitely.
So I guess at this point, we're kind of at a point where I think we know a little bit more about your group and what you're doing. Again, if you would provide some information, if somebody has a 351 and they want to make sure you have that information, how would they contact you?
You know, the Boss Nationals website, www.bossnationals.com, is obviously the key point for the show. if you go there and email us, you know, we'll be able to connect you with the proper people for registering your car, for supporting your car, finding parts for your car, getting expert advice for your car. It's an all things Boss, not only Boss 351s, the 302s and 429s as well. Our 351 group is pretty strong, and we'd be glad to help anybody that needs help. You know, you can contact Rick as well at his book. And Rick, you want to go ahead and give them your contact information?
Yeah, it's boss351book@gmail.com.
I think that's one of the most important aspects that a club or a group can offer is the networking capability of letting people know if you're looking for parts or you're looking for this or you need advice. More than likely, somebody in that group has already done it to a certain level and can be a great opportunity to have good advice instead of trying to go out there on your own and try to figure out. Because you want to talk to someone who's dealt with 351s. You don't need to talk to someone who's dealt with Mustangs per se, because they are a different animal. And I think sometimes those nuances can escape a person who's not the expert. And so by contacting yourself or people who are with your clubs, you're going to get good advice is what I'm trying to say, is you're going to get something that'll help you move along and get the car where you want it to be, restored or such.
You know, the Boss 351 is really the only one-year Mustang. It was really only built primarily from June to June, 70 to 71. And I've been collecting and restoring these cars for over 40 years. You know, I've got a dozen of them. Every day I learned something from someone else about one of these cars that I either had it wrong or I didn't know. And it's a lifelong learning experience. You know, as soon as you think you know it all, you find out you don't.
Well, that's one thing we say here at the museum. I mean, we do get quite a few calls from people about different aspects when it comes to Mustangs. And for some reason, there seems to be a perception that if you run a museum, you should know everything about Mustangs. And I'm gonna be the first to tell you, I don't. Not even close. But what we try to do is make friends with gentlemen like yourself and with other groups so that we can direct them and say, hey, you know, we don't know for sure. I want you to get the right answer the first time. And here's who we want to recommend you to go to. Because I think having that the networking to be able to call on people with that experience is huge. It's so important, because otherwise you can get frustrated. You can spend a lot of money and still not be satisfied or get the results that you want. But when you talk to somebody such as yourselves, we'll be able to, kind of, I'm sure, help them along and get them much closer to getting to where they want to be. But like you said, I do understand what you say. You learn something every day from people. It's amazing some of the information that you get. Some of the information we get that we have here with a car, somebody will walk by and say, oh, did you know? And we learn things from those folks too. And even the owner of that car will learn things. So it's an ongoing transition forever, I think. And that's what's fun about it. I enjoy that part. So I can understand when you say that you learn things from it. But again, having you as a person, as a point person, you have so much experience to share, and these new learning pieces. That's what the hobby needs. So we appreciate that. I have a question as we start to wrap up. What do each of you drive as your daily driver?
Oh, I'm probably going to burn in hell for this.
Oh gosh, don't say Subaru.
No, a 2017 crew cab Chevy Silverado.
How long have you known him, Finley? No, sorry. Yeah.
My everyday driver is a new or year old F-150 pickup truck. And every Friday night I'm out in a 70 Torino Cobra that I've owned my whole life.
Wow. Well, Rick, he just made up for your faux pas. That's great. Now I'm teasing, of course. Hey, we all drive different cars. I mean, that's, you know, we actually today at the museum, we had, for the first time ever, we had somebody drive up in a smart car. I mean, I actually had to stop and look at that. I'm going, oh my, that's the, I had a member of our staff in the office. I said, have we ever had a smart car here? And you know, no, well, we do now. But anyway, but hey, it's just interesting. I mean, obviously, the Torino, I think there's a lot of guys who have Mustangs that would trade a Mustang for that Torino, to be quite honest with you. They may not admit it, but I know that Torino is just a car that a lot of guys really do lust after. So that's a great car. So we appreciate, I appreciate it. And so Rick, do you have any other Mustang? Do you have any other cars?
Actually, I did sell my 72 R code I had for about 32 years. I went to Florida, it needed restoration. I do have my 71 M code black Mach 1, black interior, that I had when I was in high school. I got that tucked away. It needs restored. And I got a 79 Bronco that I'm thinking about restoring next after my Boss 351 is probably done next year.
Awesome. Well, I knew you had Ford blood in you somewhere. I hope you guys take my little comments in jest. I do mean it that way.
Yeah.
It's about the hobby. And I got to be honest with you, it's guys like yourself and others who have that passion that keeps it going. I mean, you know, Boss 351 is an important part of the hobby. And the fact that you guys do take the time and diligence, I'm sure that your members or your attendees as such, they do appreciate it. So I really want to thank you for coming on and sharing some of your time and information with us. And let's stay in touch so that as things come about, we want to keep people informed of what you guys are doing. So with that, I want to thank you for being on. And let's just stay in touch. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot, and we look forward to seeing everybody in Illinois next year.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to another episode of the Mustang Owners Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast so you won't miss any episodes. For more information on the museum, please go to MustangOwnersMuseum.com, and you'll find additional information on upcoming events.